Welcome to the Trouble Chat Tech Briefing. I'm your host, A.
And I'm B.
Today, we are looking at a major shift in how the tech industry plans to power the next generation of artificial intelligence. We are moving away from the lithium-ion batteries that power our phones and cars toward new chemistries designed specifically for massive data centers.
We will also be unpacking a brand new, first-of-its-kind governance framework out of Singapore that specifically targets agentic AI. Plus, we'll look at the very real, very expensive consequences of AI hallucinations when they happen inside a courtroom.
It is a packed show today, covering some of the most critical infrastructure and regulatory questions in tech right now. Let's get right into it. Our first story today comes from Chosin Ilbo, titled "Non-Lithium Batteries Power AI-Driven Energy Shift." We talk a lot about the computational requirements of AI, but the physical power requirements are becoming the industry's biggest bottleneck.
The numbers here are staggering. Global data center power consumption is projected to grow from 470 terawatt hours in 2024 to 1,300 terawatt hours by 2035. That is a massive 24/7 electricity demand that is already straining existing power grids across the world.
Right. And to manage that load, data centers need energy storage systems, or ESS. Historically, lithium-ion has been the default choice for storage, but this report highlights how the industry is pivoting toward non-lithium alternatives. The non-lithium battery market is expected to more than double, growing from $9.79 billion in 2023 to $21.4 billion by 2035.
The shift makes a lot of sense when you look at the unique demands of AI training. Lithium-ion batteries are great for consumer electronics and electric vehicles because they are lightweight and energy dense. But in a massive data center facility, weight doesn't matter. What matters is safety, longevity, and stability under high-intensity, continuous loads.
Exactly. Lithium-ion faces real challenges regarding fire safety, which is a massive liability when you were talking about billions of dollars of computing equipment housed in a single building. There is also the issue of supply chain volatility for lithium, and the fact that these batteries degrade rapidly under the kind of constant cycling an AI data center requires.
So what are the alternatives gaining traction? The report points to chemistries like sodium ion, flow batteries, and nickel zinc. These technologies are being positioned as critical infrastructure because they can provide the stable, long-duration energy storage required to keep operations running without interruption.
Landon Mossberg, the CEO of Peak Energy, summed up the market sentiment perfectly. He stated that in the U.S., concerns about energy costs and power supply speed are growing, and as a result, the demand for reliable, low-cost energy storage systems is rising rapidly.
It's a fascinating economic dynamic. The trade-offs in energy density and cost between lithium and non-lithium chemistries directly impact the viability of building new data centers. If you can use a cheaper, safer, albeit heavier and physically larger battery system, the economics of a massive AI facility change significantly.
But that raises a critical question. Are these non-lithium alternatives truly ready to scale? The lithium-ion supply chain is incredibly mature. We've spent decades optimizing the manufacturing process for it. Sodium-ion and flow batteries are promising, but ramping up manufacturing to meet a 1,300 terawatt-hour demand is a monumental industrial challenge.
That's the real tension here. The AI industry is moving at light speed, deploying new clusters of GPUs every few months. But physical infrastructure and advanced material manufacturing move at a much slower pace. We are going to see a lot of capital flowing into these alternative battery startups over the next few years as data center operators desperately look for ways to secure their power supply without relying on lithium.
Moving on to our next story from Inside Privacy. Singapore issues governance and security guidance for agentic AI. As AI systems evolve from passive chatbots into autonomous agents, regulators are starting to take notice and take action.
On January 22, 2026, Singapore's Infocom Media Development Authority, or IMDA, launched the Model AI Governance Framework for agentic AI. This is a significant milestone because it's the first framework of its kind globally to specifically target agentic systems rather than general generative AI.
To be clear on the terminology, The framework defines agentic AI as systems capable of autonomous reasoning, planning, and taking multi-step actions to achieve user-defined goals. We aren't just talking about a model generating a text summary. We are talking about a system that might update a database, send an email, or initiate a payment entirely on its own.
And that autonomy introduces entirely new risk profiles. If a passive chatbot hallucinates, you get a weird or incorrect answer on your screen. If an agentic system hallucinates, it might execute a series of actions that cause cascading failures, like spinning up thousands of cloud instances to solve a bug, costing thousands of dollars in minutes, or granting unauthorized access to sensitive systems.
Singapore's framework is currently non-binding, but it provides a structured, operational roadmap for organizations to manage these risks. It focuses on four key dimensions: assessing and bounding risks upfront, ensuring meaningful human accountability, implementing technical controls, and enabling end-user responsibility.
The emphasis on bounding risks upfront is particularly interesting. It suggests that companies need to establish strict operational boundaries for these agents before they are ever deployed into production. You have to define exactly what the agent is allowed to do, and more importantly, what it is strictly prohibited from doing, regardless of the prompt it receives.
The question of human accountability is also critical. If an autonomous agent makes a mistake that causes financial damage, who is responsible? The developer who built the model? The company that deployed it? The end user who gave it the initial prompt? The framework tries to ensure there is always a human in the loop, or at least a human who is ultimately accountable for the agent's actions.
While this framework is voluntary right now, it has the potential to become a de facto standard. International businesses often look for established guidelines to inform their procurement processes, their internal security audits, and even their legal defenses. Singapore stepping up first means they get to set the baseline for how the rest of the world approaches this.
But creating a governance document for a technology that is evolving this rapidly is incredibly difficult. How do you create a living framework that remains relevant without stifling innovation? The capabilities of agentic AI in January 2026 might look very different from what we see a year from now.
That is the perpetual challenge of technology regulation. However, by focusing on high-level principles like accountability and technical controls, rather than specific code implementations, Singapore is attempting to build a framework flexible enough to adapt as the underlying models become more sophisticated and autonomous. Our final deep dive today looks at the intersection of AI and the legal system. The story is titled, Why Go-to-Trial AI Must Be Accurate, from Artificial Lawyer.
The legal industry has been rapidly adopting AI to handle massive datasets and streamline trial preparation. It seems like a perfect fit for a profession built on reading and synthesizing thousands of pages of text. But Stephen Dowling, the CEO of TrialView, argues that for AI to be truly effective in litigation, it must be built on systems that deeply understand rigorous trial processes.
Dowling's point is that inaccurate AI in a high-stakes litigation context isn't just inconvenient, it's dangerous, and the data completely backs that up. Benchmarking from Stanford shows that legal AI models hallucinate in at least one out of six queries.
It gets even worse when you look at professional-grade legal AI tools. Some of these purpose-built systems are producing incorrect information in over 17% to 34% of cases. When you are dealing with case law and legal precedent, a 17% error rate is completely unacceptable.
We've already seen the real-world consequences of this. Multiple attorneys have faced federal court sanctions for filing briefs that contained fabricated case citations generated by AI. There were highly publicized incidents in 2023, and despite the warnings, we continued to see them happen through 2024.
It represents a direct threat to a lawyer's credibility and the integrity of the judicial process. The efficiency gains of AI are undeniable. It can parse discovery documents in seconds. But if it occasionally invents a prior ruling to support your argument, the risk far outweighs the reward.
This brings up a critical discussion about technical guardrails. How can law firms ensure AI outputs are verified before they ever reach a courtroom? It requires a fundamental cultural shift in how these tools are used. They cannot be treated as authoritative sources. They have to be treated as highly capable but highly unreliable research assistants.
Exactly. Every single citation generated by an AI needs to be manually verified against primary legal databases.
But that manual verification eats into the efficiency gains the AI was supposed to provide in the first place, which creates a tension with the traditional billable hours model.
There was also the question of whether the current legal framework is sufficient to deter reckless use. Federal sanctions are a strong deterrent, but as the technology becomes more integrated into standard legal software, the temptation to just skip the verification step will only grow.
The industry is trying to find the balance. Tools like TrialView are attempting to build systems that prioritize accuracy over broad generative capabilities. But until the hallucination rate approaches absolute zero, the legal profession is going to have to maintain extreme caution and rigorous human oversight.
All right, let's hit a few more stories real quick before we wrap up today's briefing.
Sounds good. What's first on the list?
Over at Semiconductor Engineering, there's a piece titled, "Can Edge AI Keep Up?" It details how AI model development is fundamentally outpacing silicon design cycles, creating a massive challenge for chip architects.
It's a tough balancing act. Architects have to weigh the need for adaptable edge architectures against strict power, performance, and area constraints. With edge agents now handling complex, one-shot tasks and larger token outputs compared to just 6 months ago, the hardware is really feeling the strain.
The necessity for model update frequency varies a lot, too. Factory automation might not need frequent updates, but mission-critical automotive applications require real-time or near-real-time adaptability.
It really raises the question of whether software-defined approaches can bridge the gap, or if we need a fundamental change in how we design and deploy silicon at the edge.
On the software side, we have an interesting GitHub issue in the Anthropic repository, a feature request to add QR code generation to Claude Code's remote control for mobile session access. Claude Code launched its remote control feature in February 2026, allowing developers to monitor local terminal tasks from their phones using an outbound-only HTTPS connection. It keeps the execution environment entirely local.
Right, and users are now asking for QR codes, even ASCII art ones rendered in the terminal, to make bridging that local session to a mobile device completely frictionless. Currently, Windows users don't have the quick access that macOS users enjoy. Claude Code product manager Noah Zwieben described the remote feature as a way to take a walk, see the sun, walk your dog without losing your flow. Adding a simple QR code scan definitely makes that vision a lot easier to execute.
Sticking with Claude Code, another GitHub issue highlights a major usability friction point, a feature request for shift plus arrow text selection in the prompt input box.
This is a classic clash between modern expectations and terminal realities. Claude Code is an incredibly powerful terminal native tool, but it lacks standard text editing features like visual highlighting or click to position cursors.
Anthropic does offer a Vim-style editing mode as a workaround, but for developers who aren't already power users of terminal-based editors, the inability to just highlight text normally is a surprising hurdle.
It creates a real UX gap that forces users to either adapt to terminal-specific workflows or rely on external editors just to write a prompt for the AI.
Finally, researchers at Fingerprint discovered a severe privacy vulnerability in Firefox-based browsers, where IndexedDB database ordering acted as a stable process lifetime identifier.
It's a huge deal because this identifier allowed websites to link user activity across different origins, and it persisted in Tor browser even after a user activated the new identity feature.
Mozilla has since addressed the issue in Firefox 150 by canonicalizing or sorting the IndexedDB results before returning them, which removes the entropy that created the stable identifier.
It is a stark reminder of the ongoing arms race between browser developers and tracking companies, where even a tiny implementation detail in a database API can completely undermine anonymity.
And that is going to do it for today's episode of the Troubleshot Tech Briefing.
Thank you for listening. We will be back tomorrow with more deep dives and updates from across the tech landscape.
Until then, stay curious.